Welcome to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Today, we pick up our story in Exodus chapter 12, verse number 33. It's the middle of the night, or the wee hours of the morning, of the 15th day of what is now going to be the first Jewish month. And basically, we're talking about the 14th day of April in 1456 BC. The firstborn of the Egyptians have all died. Some of them were babies, yes, but most of them were adults. The firstborn of their animals, the ones that are still alive, they've also died suddenly in the middle of the night. The Egyptians had been warned that this was coming, and so they apparently were up and became aware instantly that this had happened, and there is great grief all over the land. But the Israelites have all been safely inside their blood-marked homes, eating their Passover meal. In haste, with their sandals on their feet, and their traveling clothes on, and their staff in their hand, and all their goods have been packed up. They probably have carts, many of them, that have already been yoked up with animals, ready to go. Because Moses told them, once Pharaoh says, get out, we got to move. And so it's the wee hours of the morning. And verse 33 of chapter 12 says, the Egyptians were urgent with the people to send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we shall all be dead. So the Egyptian people, as a larger group, have been watching this thing play out in front of them, where Pharaoh has effectively been playing chicken with the Creator God of the universe, He who is, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews. And now it's come to this climactic point where everybody has lost someone. And they want the Israelis gone before all of them are dead. Verse 34, the Israelis had been told to get ready to move quick. And so verse 34, the people took their dough before it was leavened and their kneading bowls being bound up in their cloaks on their shoulders. So they'd already packed up the stuff they'd made bread with, the raw dough, but they hadn't let the dough just sit in these bowls to rise. They took that kneaded up bread and immediately put it in the ovens to roast unleavened bread. Bake unleavened bread, and then they packed up their bowls to be ready to go with them. Verse 35, the people of Israel had also done as Moses told them, for they had asked the Egyptians for silver and gold jewelry and for clothing. So most of the Egyptian population that had constant contact with Israelis had already been approached by their Israeli neighbors saying, hey, Egypt needs to pay us for our services. We've been slaves working without salaries, and you guys owe us. And because of all the plagues, these Egyptians wanted Israel gone, and they were so willing to make Israel go away that they just started handing them gold and silver and jewelry and clothing things and said, yes, take it. Just take it. Go. Here's your payment. Go, go, go. That's what they want. Verse 36, and he who is had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians so that they let them have what they asked, and thus they plundered the Egyptians. And so the Israelis end up being paid probably a couple of different generations worth of salary for 7 day a week, all year round work. And it makes them instantly wealthy overnight. Everybody in Israel is instantly wealthy overnight. And they pack this stuff up as well. As I've mentioned a couple of times, the supplies for building the tabernacle, the materials for building the tabernacle, will come out of this great wealth of back wages collected on this last day that Israel was in Egypt. Verse 37, the people of Israel journeyed from Ramesses, which means the place of the outgoing of the sun. It's probably a reference to the region near Heliopolis, which is probably also known by the name as Goshen, the land of Goshen. I'm guessing that it is probably just a little bit east and maybe perhaps a little north of Goshen, or excuse me, of Heliopolis is where Goshen was located. Some people identify it as what's referred to as Wadi Tumalat. It's in the eastern section of the Nile Delta. And so this is the starting point. Moses had orchestrated it with God's assistance that all the Israeli slaves, some of whom might have been working up and down the Nile River length of Egypt, have all been brought back to the Israeli conclave of Goshen. And so that's where all the Israelis in all of Egypt have been gathered for their Passover meal. And as soon as they get the signal from Pharaoh to leave in the wee hours of the morning of the 15th, they all start leaving. And so their first day's journey is from Ramesses to Sukkot, which is the first stopping point on the Exodus. And it's probably only 20 or 30 miles at the most east of the land of Goshen's starting point, Ramesses. It's probably intended to represent a movement toward the Promised Land along the King's Highway, along the Shore Highway. But they're going to deviate from that, and we'll talk about that as we progress. And here we have our first estimate of the Israeli population at this time. About 6,000 men on foot, besides women and children. So this represents all of the men, and I think it probably starts with even unmarried younger men, but all the men up to the aged men that are going to be put in the census later, and then another bunch besides them, the ladies and the kids that are younger. And so a good estimate is probably 2 or 3 million Israelis altogether, maybe more than that. But it's not just Israelis. Verse 38, a mixed multitude also went up with them, and this is going to be non-Israelis. Some of them might be pure-blood Egyptians that have been so impressed with the power of He Who Is against their gods and goddesses that they've decided that they're going to go with the Israelis. More than likely, a larger group would be non-Israeli Semites that have also been working for Egyptians, and they see this as their chance to get out of town, to get out of Egypt. So they kind of hitch their wagons to the Israeli movement out of the country. And so they just add to the population. And this bunch will cause trouble later. And so keep them in mind. And then very much livestock, both flocks and herds. So they're also moving a lot of animals along. Verse 39, they baked unleavened cakes of dough that they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared any provisions for themselves. So each night when they, you know, have a very quick setup of a overnight camp, so they don't have like a full-fledged encampment set up every night. It's probably more of a, let's put up like a little awning and put up some sleeping bags and things like that. And they will bake bread, but they won't let it rise before they bake it, because they're going to immediately get back up the next morning as soon as they can and move again. So they don't have the time to bake truly leavened bread. And that's why for the next 7 days, the 15th through the 21st, they'll only be eating unleavened bread. And then that historically becomes part of the memorial every year during those days of unleavened bread. Verse 40, historical alignment, a little chronological marker. The time that the people of Israel lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of 430 years, on that very day, now I don't think it means the very day that Jacob came into Egypt 430 years earlier, but rather the very day that they're leaving Egypt. They had been in Egypt 430 years. All the hosts of He Who Is went out from the land of Egypt. So from that we can take a chronological anchor, and I've done that in my chronological companion to show that there is exactly 430 years that they're in Egypt. Now, when God was talking to Moses, He prophesied to Moses that they would be there 400 years, or four long generations of 100 years each. That is a rounded number. And you'll hear that sometimes mentioned, that they spent 400 years in Egypt. But the literal time is here, 430 years. Verse 42, it was a night of watching by He Who Is to bring them out of the land of Egypt. So this same night is a night of watching kept to He Who Is by all the people of Israel throughout their generations. So basically, the reminder is, in the first Passover night, the first night of unleavened bread, the Israelis were eating their roasted lambs, waiting for the signal that God had passed through with judgment on the unmarked houses and passed over the marked houses, the blood-marked houses. So God was keeping watch over Israel that night. And from here on out, every year, on that same night on the calendar, the Israelis will keep watch with their meal, reminding them of these historical events that started their nation. And so that's why Jesus spends His last night before the crucifixion eating the Passover meal with His disciples. Verse 43, He Who Is said to Moses and Aaron. Now, this probably was said earlier, but it again gets put into the text because this text is going to be the book of the law. It's going to be the place that people will look to for how to do things. So Moses was told by God, these are the rules regarding the Passover. Make sure it gets written down. So this is the statute of the Pesach, the Passover. no foreigner shall eat of it. So no non-Israelis can eat the Passover meal unless they have decided to become honorary Israelis. Then they can participate. Basically, they have to have converted to the Israeli faith, and then they can eat of it. Verse 44, every slave that is bought for money may eat of it after you've circumcised him. So if Israelis buy up the indebtedness of a non-Israeli and therefore turn them into their slave, their servant, or they hire somebody to work in their household year-round, then they can eat of the Passover meal provided they have been circumcised, which is effectively they have become followers of He Who Is. Verse 45, no foreigner or hired servant may eat of it, with the exception if they've become followers of the one true God and been circumcised, then they may. Verse 46, it shall be eaten in one house. So it's not a traveling meal. You shall not take any of the flesh outside the house. So it is not a picnic lunch or a picnic supper. It has to happen inside the house because it's a reminder that they were eating inside blood-marked houses. And that symbolism must be maintained. Symbolism is important for teaching purposes. And so you can't fiddle-faddle with the components of the symbol. You have to keep them intact or it loses its power. It also loses its prophetic nature, which is important for the next line. It says, you shall not break any of its bones. The Passover lamb was roasted whole. It wasn't cut up. It was put on a spit and turned over a hot fire until it was cooked. Then it was probably put on a gigantic platter or a board on the table, and everybody just cut off whatever it is they were going to eat. Now, if it was a normal, ordinary meal that you just took your time with, sooner or later, after much of the meat had been eaten off one of those bones, somebody would reach up there, grab one of those bones, and snap it and start slurping the marrow out of the center of that bone, because that was considered to be something special. Now, before you go, oh, that sounds so gross, you understand that the juices that come out of that usually it's a, I'm thinking of a chicken breast or a chicken leg or something like that, that you're cooking in the skillet. It's the juices that come out of the marrow that make that gravy so delicious. So don't go, yuck. This was something that they thought of. It's the delicious part of the bone. And so to break the bone open and to slurp the marrow out of it was a symbol of taking time over the meal, just enjoying the event itself. Now, we have a modern-day phrase that a lot of people don't think about. We talk about chewing the fat with someone, which by that we mean just spending time talking to them. That actually comes from a similar situation where you're sitting at the table and everybody's pretty much eaten what they want, but every once in a while you just kind of reach up to the meat platter and you grab a piece and you stick it in your mouth and kind of chew on it. You're not doing it for sustenance. You're doing it for the taste of it. And of course, some of that roasted fat's over there, and you grab that and you stick it in your mouth and boy, that's delicious, isn't it? Kind of the crunchy bits. And so that became the phrase chewing the fat, because you're hanging out after the meal. So the point here was, this is not a meal where you're going to be hanging out for a long time afterwards. So don't you dare break any of the bones of the Passover lamb. Now, why am I spending so much time on it? Because this phrase is quoted in the book of John, chapter 19, verse 36, when it says that when they came to Jesus, having already broken the leg bones of the other two crucified persons to make them die quicker, they discovered that Jesus was already dead. And so they didn't break his leg bones. They instead just stabbed him into the pleural and the cardiac cavity to make sure he was dead. And water and blood came out. So the blood had already stopped circulating, was starting to separate into the serum, which is clear, and the blood clots, which is the red blood cells clotting together. And so they knew beyond a shadow of a doubt he was dead. And so John the Apostle, who saw all of that, said, and thus was fulfilled the passage which says, not a bone of him shall be broken. Because you see, Jesus is our Passover lamb. And so everything prophetic about the Passover lamb was true about Jesus. Not a bone of him was broken. Verse 47, all the congregation of Israel shall keep it. If a stranger shall sojourn with you, meaning a non-Israeli again, and would keep the Passover to he who is. So you got somebody that moves in, and he's interested in becoming part of the Israeli community, basically to convert to the Israeli faith. Then this is what's required. Let all his males be circumcised. Then he may come near and keep it. And he shall be as a native of the land. So basically, he becomes an honorary Israeli. He gets adopted into the family. And then he may keep the Passover, because the Passover isn't just an ordinary meal. It is a significant cultural remembrance of God's activity, miraculously, on behalf of them. And so it's not to be played with. It's not to be taken lightly. So no uncircumcised person shall eat of it. And there shall be one law for the native and for the stranger who sojourns among you. So the same rule applies across the board. If you are a true believer in the God of the Exodus and you worship him, as the Israelis worship him, then and only then may you participate in the Passover. That's the rule. Verse 50. All the people of Israel did just as he who is commanded Moses and Aaron. And on that very day, the 15th day of the new first month of the Jewish people, on our calendar, this is the daylight hours of 15 April, 1456 BC. That's the calendar date I've come up with. On that very day, he who is brought the people of Israel out of the land of Egypt by their hosts. Hosts, just kind of an older word for groups, large groups. Chapter 13. He who is said to Moses, consecrate to me all the firstborn. Remember, God had passed over all the firstborn of Israel when they were inside the blood-marked houses. Otherwise, they would have been on the death list. So afterward, God says, okay, you need to tag as special all those firstborn. From here on out, every firstborn is going to be special. Whatever is the first to open the womb among the people of Israel, both of man and of beast, is mine. God says, I claim them. And we'll have some modification of that understanding later. Keep that in the back of your mind. Then Moses said to the people, remember this day in which you came out of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, for by the strong hand he who is brought you out from this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten. Today, in the month of Aviv. Now, Aviv is the name given at this time to the first month of the new Jewish year. It's the spring, first month of spring. The Israelis typically designated the first crescent moon either appearing in connection with the spring equinox or shortly after the spring equinox. That becomes the first month of the year. And Abib was a word that described how the barley crop was pretty much ready for harvest in that particular time of the year. And so that's how it gets its name. So Moses says, today in this month of Aviv, the month of the barley harvest, you are going out. And when he who is brings you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, these are the different groups that are mentioned as representative of the non-Israeli occupants of the Promised Land, the ones that are going to be evicted because of their sin. He says, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey. So when you get into the prosperous promised land, you shall keep this service in this month. So from here on out, this will be a special holiday, holy day. It's actually a series of holy days that when you get into your promised land, you must keep. And when we next get back into the Word, we'll hear more details of those rules.